Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake them ropes, Jeff, Chris, coming to you on Thursday. A little bit sparse because SmackDown happens on Friday. AEW's Go Home, which it looks like a kind of a B card to me.
Looks like it might be staying home.
But we will preview Double or Nothing just for craps and giggles. And talk a little bit about the news going on. But Chris, you... who get your wrestling through less than legal means sometimes.
I get a lot of TV through less than legal means.
TV, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, movies, TV.
You were on your site and all they have is NXT from 2016, which sounds like a great place to live.
It was an interesting time capsule on the site that I normally get other like movies and stuff from. I was like, I wonder if they have NXT on here. And so I logged on and searched, and I found that they had NXT, but the latest they went to was 2016. And I popped on an episode, and it was Solomon Crowe. What was that his name? The hacker dude.
Yeah. Callahan.
Sami Callahan as Solomon Crowe versus Ty Dillinger. And... perfect 10 tied. I know. Is that not a moment in time, right? Ty Dillinger over AF? Very, very over at this point. Having a match against Sami Callahan, who is definitely Mr. Get His Crap In. Whether or not it is a coherent usage of that crap or not a coherent usage of that crap, he is getting it in. And I was struck with how much looser and, you know, for lack of a better term, indier, but like not indie in a bad way, the way that we usually use the pejorative, but like less WWE style, the in-ring style was, less policed, shall we say. And these guys were having a much more flowing match. And we talk about NXT now as main roster with yellow ropes. And I think you really do see it in the way these matches get worked, dude. They're meticulously methodical. Like when you go, oh, here'd be an interesting place to zig. They do not zig. They do not zig in the slightest. They go right down the middle.
The takeovers are still great. The takeovers are still great, but the week to week, this week, we're getting the supernatural crap with Mercedes Martinez. We're getting the bad comedy skits with Cameron Grimes and L.A. Knight and the Million Dollar Man to set that up. This is all the main roster instincts are there.
Can I start here just because this is a quick one?
Sure.
But so Frankie Monet debuts this week, and we have seen this WWE debut 10,000 times before. Big build for this new character that we're going to have on. They come on and they go up against an enhancement talent. However, in this case, the enhancement talent slotted here is Cora Jade, someone they have, you know, hope and building up and some hope for. So here is a different path for them to go, and one that's like not out of nowhere here. It's basically the 1-2-3 kid model. It started off by making it all about Frankie Monet, but have Cora Jade actually pull the upset on Frankie Monet on Monet's debut. Because the plan, Jeff, is never to make Monet the champion or anything. Like, Monet is just going to be, like, in the mix. I don't see her as the champion-type figure, and I didn't see necessarily anything in the ring this week that suggested to me that Monet is necessarily capable of carrying that takeover level main event thing. You know, maybe also being in the match, but not carrying it. Build Cora Jade up. Have Cora Jade knock off Frankie Monet to put a little bit of buzz underneath Cora Jade. And Monet will be fine because she's a heel and she can go and get her heat back against any number of other people on the roster the next week. But then you're actually building up Cora Jade.
This was the week where I looked and I went, yeah, this something came down once it went on USA, where we need to do the same thing we're doing on the other two shows. And it's just, it's everything from, I liked that Karrion Kross Finn Balor match. Oh, by the way, we're on video at Voices of Wrestling channel on YouTube. No sponsor this week. We're just going to kind of freeball it a bit here. Karrion Kross is just doing the most ridiculous play to the back of the room faces, things, and you're just
and
like,
Scarlett on the outside. It's so weird that Scarlett doesn't, in my opinion, add to the act all the time. There are times where she's a negative to the act.
Yes, because she's doing the witch / temptress. She's moving like wavily, and it's not really, you know, she's kind of doing moment shots / commedia dell'arte when she moves. Like, it's like she's trying to move through the space like she's swimming, like one of those acting exercises where they go, oh, pretend the air is green pea soup and you're trying to go through it type of thing. It's that level one acting crap that they do in every acting class here in LA. I just, it's gotten to the point where I'm just like, it doesn't make him any tougher. It doesn't make me scared of him. It makes me feel like he's,
it doesn't add mystique. It does not add mystique.
No.
And I think the great managers, especially for ominous characters, add a layer of mystique to them. Paul Bearer creates contrast and adds mystique to The Undertaker, and also serves as a mouthpiece, which is great because it allows The Undertaker to stay strong and silent. Karrion Kross speaks more than Scarlett, so Scarlett's not even serving as the mouthpiece for Karrion Kross. Scarlett sometimes, however, is visually overtaking the scene, and as you're sort of highlighting, visually overtaking the scene at times where she really shouldn't be. Like, there's a match happening inside the ring, and numerous times I find myself being drawn to Scarlett being like, ah, on the outside, like, you know, like throwing her hands, you know, like trying to summon up Karrion Kross like he's a snake. Well, Kross is in there trying to do like this, like MMA, like, you know, tough, like brawly thing. Mm-hmm. It creates, as I was saying, going back to Paul Bearer and The Undertaker, yes, there's a contrast there, but the contrast is sort of a generative contrast. In this case, the contrast that gets created between Scarlett and Karrion is not always generative. It is generative, you could argue, in the entrance. If you like the Fallen Prey song and you like that whole gimmick, when they come in and they do the little spot where she comes out through the legs and it's like, ah, like, if that's your thing, that's your thing, it works. But it really falls apart during the matches. I have a hard time pointing to any example during a match where I feel like Scarlett is really adding to this act.
Yeah.
I know that's going to sound really harsh, but listener, reel yourself that. Think about a time during the match where you find Scarlett adding to the act.
It's the last time she really added to the act, the Keith Lee flash paper contract thing.
Or how about the Finn Balor double turn, double cross, I'm playing mind games with you thing?
Yeah,
yes. And those would be the examples of her adding to the act.
No, the time when she added to the act was when she was the Harbinger of Doom, where she'd come out, you know, she, and nobody knew why she was there, but she's just kind of like with the Adam Cole, when there was like questions of who's gonna, yeah, it's during the Adam Cole, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross type of feud and stuff, and she just randomly come out, you know, as if, you know, Karrion Kross will then follow or something to that effect. But yeah, oh god, that Finn Balor thing where it's like, you accidentally hit her.
and they never paid that off. It was like a story that, to your point of not adding. This is also a thread that never really got kind of wrapped up in any so coherent way. Was she like deliberately trying to get herself hit to like get into Karrion Kross's head to plant a seed that he needed to get really aggressive to Finn Balor? And then did that mean that like that was the whole plan, and like that was her master plan on like they never explained any of that. And I don't know, like if you're gonna have her be like this master of fate and destiny stuff, she needs to be talking more and Karrion Kross needs to be talking less. If she's the master of fate and destiny, she needs to be controlling Karrion Kross's destiny. If she's a lot of plot needs to be moving through her in a way that right now it isn't. She's just, you know, dancing in the background.
There's something to be said about the strong, silent type. And
especially when that's the type of character you're trying to make.
Yes, but we do have some news. Not a lot, but some. Oh, the revolving door of commentary. Turn. Adnan Virk, we barely knew ye. Adnan Virk, 7 weeks on the job. At most.
Yeah.
Gone. As your head announcer of Raw. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Adnan Virk. I think he's a pleasant voice. I think, because I listen to a couple of podcasts he does. But this wasn't his fault to me. He was perfectly vanilla. The way he said, ooh, he was and oh my gosh, a lot.
He was learning the moves. He yes. learned a lot. He clearly was spending some time boning up on WWE and wanted to learn. It is just that the WWE commentary style, storytelling style or whatever, is so particular. I also think that there are people in that headset who, frankly, will not be satisfied with anyone who sits in this chair. And yes. I think the real problem that we're heading into, Jeff, is that we're about to be in a round of musical chairs. Like, Turn is going to be a song I need to learn on the guitar, because we're going to have, like, a procession of these various commentators coming in for about 2 months, 3 months, not lasting, because they can't learn the style. But it's not about learning the style. It's that, like, no one pleases Vince anymore, because it's not just Adnan Virk, right? It's also Tom Phillips.
Well, we will get into that. I want to stick on Adnan Virk just Absolutely. A little bit, because the play-by-play job, for those of you who have never really noticed this, that guy is not supposed to call moves, really. He's there to forward narratives. And the problem was they didn't trust him to the point where Corey Graves would take over on play-by-play sometimes doing it. And then Adnan would have to stay there and ask questions of Corey and Byron. And it just, all the roles got mixed up here. I'm sure Vince is in his head just...
Graves is going to be the commentator. Like, this ends
Byron
with
Corey. Should be the play-by-play guy. Corey could be the color guy.
I know that. I know that, but here's the problem. Vince is going to get annoyed with Byron as the commentary guy. So literally the only announcer that Vince seems to really like anymore is Graves. And Graves can't be a one-man booth.
And all Adnan had to do during these matches was go, oh my, oh.
Because he's not allowed to call moves or anything. Yeah, he's not allowed to do anything. Yeah, like they get annoyed with you if you do too much match calling.
If you get yourself over. He's a mark for himself. He's
There's that too. Like, yes, it comes off as he thinks he knows all the moves now, does he? Yeah, that's the gimmick. That's the character I'm playing on air, buddy. I'm supposed to be like the voice of authority.
You are the straight man. You're supposed to, but you're also supposed to be excited about the product.
Yep.
That's the thing. I mean, I just don't understand this. And then we move on, because we found a replacement for Adnan Virk, or at least someone that's going to be Next man up, that's Jimmy Smith, former UFC and Bellator color guy. Not play-by-play guy, color guy, to come in here and do this. Not a wrestling fan of recent vintage. Was more of an older fan in terms of that, but hasn't been keeping up with the product. By his own admission, he's going to come in here and Vince is going to say, MMA guys, what do they know? Screw them.
No, because the only reason you'd have an MMA guy come in is to call moves. You would be better off, like for WWE's purposes, they would be much better off looking for actors who have an interest in wrestling. I'm not trying to like get.
They had one in the system. John LaQuasto was the 205 Live play-by-play guy, and they cut him. He was great. He's a kid from out here. I knew him from After Buzz and some of those shows here. They had him in their system, got rid of him. Probably because he's not 6'3" and dark hair.
That really
like
matters
McMahon.
In the commentary booth. Looking the part really matters in the commentary booth because they love to put the commentary booth on camera. It's very important that the head commentator often go into the ring and conduct interviews on the WWE format. That's a big thing they like to lean on, right? No, this is a real problem for them. Because I think that they think, okay, we didn't like Verk. We're going to get some other person. There's lots of other people who'd love to come in and do commentary.
Everybody
for
WWE. Wants to work for the WWE.
No, they
it's
don't.
It's their dream job.
No, they don't. And this turnover thing is, it's like a member of Congress's office. So when you see that, like, they're turnover staff all the time, it tells you something's going on with management up top. I would not want to be sitting in that commentary booth because I, as you and I both know, it means having Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon perpetually in your ear, or essentially the message
in your ear, not just in your ear, but micromanaging every single thing you say and then calling you a moron when you screw it up because they're in the head. No, stupid, do this. That kind of thing.
I don't think Adam Verk was begging to stay. You know what I mean? I think Adam Berg was like, well, I'd like to keep the job, but I don't think he was sitting there going like, I've always wanted to work here. I can make this work. I will try. No, I think Adam Berg, like many other before him, were like, you know what? Vince McMahon, that was a lot of him. I'm good.
No, you know what? I think Adnan was like one of those guys who, oh man, I grew up watching the WWE and this will be such a great opportunity. And I'll go in there and I'll show them what I can do and they'll respect me. Nah. And then you get in there and you find out that you have to do, you have to eat a lot of crap to survive. And you have to basically,
you have to remove all flavor from yourself. The only person who's figured out a way to save any flavor to themselves whatsoever is Corey Graves.
But at the same time, you have to fight for yourself, too. It's one of those weird things because he won't respect you as a man if you don't stand up for yourself. But also, if you stand up for yourself, you're a difficult employee. It's just the most ridiculous place to work on Earth. And people can make it work. We have friends who have made it work. So,
well, I think there are certain positions in the company that are easier to work out of than others. I'm not saying necessarily working in some of those positions are the easiest ones to work in, but like, I just think out of all the positions right now, given the disposition of Vince and Kevin Dunn, being the head commentator in the Raw and SmackDown booth, and probably increasingly now the NXT booth, it is. Sort of like a fool's errand. It's like one of those. Did you ever play SimCity 2000?
No, but I know okay. The Sims.
Okay, no, well, not the Sims. I'm talking about SimCity, where you like actually you're not
it's
managing people's
same.
Person. No, it's not. The Sims is just about getting
Nerd!
Two robot. No, it's just getting about two robot people to bone. That's all the Sims is about. SimCity is about quality government. And what makes a good city work, Jeff? They're totally different things. They're totally different things.
I'm sure.
Robots boning quality cities.
Poli-sci majors all over the world are rushing to play Sim City.
They used to have model cities based around Sim City 2000,
oh,
not
so
the
like,
Sims.
So it's like Civilization, okay?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yes, right. So you have a city, but like, there are certain scenarios in the game, like this one will probably make me chuckle. Like Flint was one of the scenarios. And it was one of these
Flint,
ones
Michigan?
That yes, save Flint, Michigan. Yeah, in the mid-90s. Like, Flint, Michigan is collapsing because the 1970s automotive boom has led to a broad decline in Flint, Michigan. Save it.
One-party rule. I mean, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just a grand and a dying industry, broadly speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, like, anyways, it's one of these failing propositions. That's kind of what I look at head commentator as being. Like, you just can't. You can't really satisfy Vince because what Vince really wants to hear is himself, but you don't know which version of himself he wants to hear on any given day.
He's the John Elway. Because John Elway, the general manager of the Denver Broncos, really wants himself as the quarterback.
Does not matter that the league has passed him up and that, like, John Elway's style of quarterbacking would not necessarily work in today's
yes.
league.
But yeah. but he knows he wants
but,
John
but,
Elway.
But he want,
and
he
he'll
wants
know
John,
he'll
Elway.
See John Elway when he sees it.
Yep.
I could see Jimmy Smith quitting on air halfway through a show. I really could, but
that would
gets
be
even
a real
better.
Issue. I think that's ahead. Where it gets really interesting, right? Like when I know it seems like we're a
nobody
couple.
Nobody will do that. Nobody will ever do that.
I don't know that anyone will ever straight up quit on air, but like, what if someone quits like 2-3 weeks in? Like, if Vince like starts chewing through commentators, like. 2 in 2 months. That's
interesting
sort of
you say that because there's no safety net now. Because amongst all the firings, and I'll get a little bit into that after this, Tom Phillips released by the company today. The guy that's there that knows your system, that's Michael Cole's basically pet project, who's done everything in the world for them. His main crime is what? What was his crime that he was a little bit that he had a little bit of banter with Samoa Joe? Is that why we pulled him from coming? Or do we expect ratings to go up because the color guy or because the play-by-play guy is good? This isn't. Are we overrating JR's ability to draw during the Attitude Era? Well, I don't understand this at all. Not only are you going through new play-by-play guys like toilet paper, you're going to fire the guy that's next man up because Vic Joseph, also formerly of the Raw desk, if you may recall, Chris, is now on NXT mostly until next NBA season. And then
yeah, he sounds like he's a stopgap for WWE because Vic's out. And again, going back to our conversation, why would Vic want to stay watching this cluster that is the head commentary booth?
Well,
like if you're Vic and you accepted the Raw job, you would still be looking for other jobs because you would never trust that you actually have the Raw job because you already lost the Raw job once.
Yeah, same with Tom. It's like, why would I come back at this point when I know you're looking for somebody else? And there's not a lot of people in that hamper in terms of the B team of announcers that they're grooming because again, they got rid of LaQuasto. Rich Brennan could have helped them quite a bit. Maybe you call up Rich and go, "Hey Rich, would you like to come in again?"
Vince does not like a non-American English voice, but like Michael Schiavello. Yeah, he's not my guy, but like, I mean, Vince is running out of options, dude.
Wait, Schiavello's also fat and bald. As I recall, that wouldn't look good on TV.
Both of those.
And a little bit older. So we don't want older as well. You know, we want a 25-year-old Lyle Wagner looking.
we don't want Mauro Ranallo.
We
don't want him. This is where they really shot themselves in the foot. Yes, I know people didn't like the pop culture references all the time, but like in terms of actual ability to call stuff, and we've seen that after leaving WWE, like he was a top notch calling of match guy. And the reason he started going to all these pop culture references all the time, I don't know why more people didn't put this together, is because he was getting in his ear, "Stop calling the match, stop calling the match." So the only thing that Mauro could really do anymore on the mic was, "This reminds me of the NWA record that I used to listen to in 1992.
JR is getting obscenely overpaid in AEW, so he ain't coming through that door. Also, probably too old. I mean, there's Josh Matthews, you know, Mike Tenay. I like Joe Galli a lot. Joe Galli would actually be the best guy to do
Joe
that.
I like Joe Galli a lot, too. I mean, he would be their best option, but, like, it would be, like, why? I don't mean this in any way as a slight to Joe Galli, but why would you hire Joe Galli when you had Tom Phillips? They're basically yes. The same, like, on-air personality flavor.
It is maddening. It is. Who's going to be?
Who is going to be the guy? I guess they're going to bring back Michael Cole. That's the only, like, Cole's the only guy
that
can.
Cole wants to move out of the position. That's
yes.
The funny thing is Cole
yes,
wants
I know.
Out.
He wants out. I mean, this, and bringing back Cole.
Well, he wants to be management. He wants to groom. He wants to teach. He wants to.
He wants to be management, maybe not groom. But no, I get what you're saying. Coach. Yes. He wants to coach. So I think Cole would maybe at most be a 12-month stopgap. And I don't think he'd, like, love doing it. So, I mean, what you don't want to do is have him go, you know, maybe it's time to retire, too. Maybe I could take a little break from the company.
My yeah. prediction is Michael Cole is the play-by-play guy by the end of August.
Yeah. He's the only guy left. He's the only guy.
I originally said Tom Phillips would be back in that chair, and then they fired him.
Which is interesting. It makes you wonder, did Tom Phillips lose the favor of Michael Cole?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
I don't think any of this has to do with Michael Cole. Unless, okay.
I think this all has, this is Michael Cole's master plan. He's going to pull off the mask and be like, it was me all along, Austin.
Well, no, here's the interesting question. And it's one that I don't think anybody's ever going to be able to answer. Now, the new guy in charge is Nick Khan. Now, we know when Hunter started to get power that Vince would purposely, at times, undercut Triple H to say, know your place in the pecking order with guys that Triple H liked, guys that Triple H really wanted to see be stars. You know, if somebody else has an opinion other than what Vince wants, Vince is going to prove that guy wrong. Rey Mysterio as champ. Big example of that, where I think Patterson and a bunch of other guys in the room said, hey, let's belt Rey Mysterio. Oh, he'll never get over. And then Vince proceeded to basically have him lose every match as champ. Now, Nick Khan wanted Adnan Virk because Adnan Virk brought sports credibility in there. Maybe Vince didn't want Adnan Virk, so he wanted to prove it as a self-fulfilling prophecy type of thing. And, you know, I don't know which pick Jimmy Smith is because he's done stuff for NXT. But until that old man croaks, and I hate to say it that way, you're going to have these types of questions. Now, there's another possibility going on here as well outside of the broadcasting things. Because with this company, they just fired, 50 to 70 people behind the scenes due to quote-unquote redundancy.
I thought it was budget stuff. I mean, it's just the finances are it's the best record, but the best year on record, but it's also like a really tight time, too.
Chris,
you know?
As a person who worked in big law, our most profitable years were the times that they'd start, was exactly the moment they'd start to fire people. Because they're like, we've made all this money. Now we can.
We would like to keep as much of it as possible.
Yes,
and we don't want you guys to have any of it.
Well, okay. Look how much money we made right now. If we could cut all this overhead and all these drones in
the drones have built the infrastructure for us to keep making the money.
Yes, but at the same time. Then we could say we have more profit per partner than any other firm in the country. And we could lure in more money through bigger attorneys and more higher profile rainmakers and blah, blah, blah. This is how companies think. So when you say, oh, we had our most profitable year ever. And then they have the press releases and the little powwows and Zoom. Oh, and Each of you is part of that. No, what they're telling you is time to fire all you. Some of you ain't going to be making it to next year. Let's put it that way. Because now's the time to really spruce up this. Because now there are rumors that they're grooming this for grooming. I keep using that term. They're sprucing this business up for somebody to take over. I don't think that's true. I just don't see Vince selling this thing to any. I don't see Disney
wouldn't have thought that. Maybe it's just the other news of the week here with Amazon and MGM. But I guess I don't rule
content?
It out.
You think content providers is going to be the big thing here, and they're just going to say, look at all this and here comes WWE with the presentation. Look at the smiles on faces. We're family-friendly entertainment.
We have John Cena. I want them to, with absolutely no shame whatsoever, claim that they still have John Cena as a regular featured star on the programming. WWE is the home of John Cena, baby, and it will be until 2030.
Let's do the old number 32 we did with Fox Sports and say we give a sports presentation for this. We're all things to anybody. We're an easily malleable entertainment property that provides hundreds of hours of original content for your streaming platform over the top, OTT.
The Fox sale makes me believe that friggin' anything is possible.
Yes.
After watching the stock go to $100 on absolute crap and them getting sold to Fox on a total bill of goods and these stupid suits, like, not seeing that this is an absolute Potemkin village of a company. It is... They are not the 1990s WWF.
No.
They are an absolute shell of that. Right down to the fireworks. There's a fraction of the fireworks. The houses are half as hot. The pay-per-view sales were down before they even got to getting rid of the pay-per-view sales entirely. The network era cannibalized what was left of the pay-per-view sales thing. They probably could have squeezed another couple few years out of the pay-per-view sales thing.
They're a model home.
Actually, AEW...
They are a model home.
Yeah, AEW makes an argument that maybe they still could be running at least quarter annual pay-per-view sort of event thing for Survivor Series and WrestleMania and that sort of thing, because AEW is doing that and still getting 100,000 sales in pay-per-view. It's weird. It's always been weird to me that the business and investment community does not see these things that you and I see fairly, like, obviously about this company.
Did you hear Stephanie this week talk about how the sale to Peacock helps them to concentrate on their storytelling and content creation?
And certainly when you think of when wrestling was at its hottest, the two phrases that you associated with wrestling in the 1990s were storytelling, content creation. That is what made wrestling red hot.
No, it's because everybody hates their boss. That's why they liked Mr. McMahon, Steve Austin. So, blah, blah, blah. All right, let's get that taste out of our mouth so I can talk about something other that was also somewhat distasteful. John Cena had to come to Jesus moment, or more of a come to Mao moment, crawling hands on knees to beg for forgiveness because he has not yet learned the Hollywood PR game when it comes to action movies yet. Do not piss off China. Now, look, I am somewhat of a hypocrite on this. I had family that were refugees from the Mao regime. I do not like China's government, but I do buy Apple products. I am as much a hypocrite as anybody else. I'm an actor. If you put me in some of these brainless action movies funded by Chinese money, I would do it because I don't have an acting career and I want to have a bigger career. So I have some sympathy for John Cena here. I do.
He's also not really in financial straits to the point. I mean, he was the highest paid talent when he's on the WWE roster. He currently has a TV show. He's very well off. He does not need to be associating himself with the Chinese government.
He wants to be Dwayne, and the Chinese government funded a Dwayne blockbuster. the skyscraper movie he did, where he'd die hard with a paraplegic or whatever it was. Like, die hard with a guy with an artificial limb. I think that was the pitch of the movie. You know, The Meg was a Chinese movie. If you want to really get, and he's learning how to play the game.
Tom Cruise knows how to play the game. Interest with China goes deeper. Like, he's been really, like, he learned Mandarin. And this is, like, you know, back in 2010.
With the WWE, yeah, when they were looking to expand kind of forward into looking. China.
He was all too willing to, like, learn Mandarin. And I mean, this, of course, gets back to WWE's sort of, like, you know, kind of questionable relationship. And we've talked about that, too, on air.
Go ahead. Do you think, I mean, I do not think at all. I think John Cena, much like Dwayne, and at this point a little bit like Tom Cruise, is an empty vessel. He does not have strong opinions about geopolitics in Asia. I don't think he meant to offend China, but China's gonna be offended by anything.
So let's get into the operative comment for people who don't know. So what Cena said initially was that Taiwan is a country, which if you grow up here in America, you learn Taiwan as a country. However, China would argue I'm really trying to just put this in the most neutral terms possible here.
Let me do it then.
Go ahead. Yeah, I thought you said you couldn't.
When Chiang Kai-shek was put in exile in Taiwan, they refused to recognize him as a country, and they've been giving them the business ever since in the United Nations, hoping that the UN won't recognize them as an official country, because then it gives them legitimacy as a leadership group in exile, even though Chiang Kai-shek has been dead for years. But they also
would like to annex Taiwan, too.
Yes, they'd like to annex Taiwan.
Yeah, broader speaking, China uses their, what I would consider to be tenuous understanding of history, to justify a land expansion. And again, you like in America, you learn Taiwan as a country, which is like I would argue probably the correct way of understanding this situation. That's what Cena said. However, obviously you can't say that in China. So that was the big no-no that he made.
Yes. And the more difficult part of this is that so much America culture has a weird, uneasy relationship with China, because there's lots of money to be made in China. The NBA wants that China money. Disney wants the Chinese money. Action movies will get bankrolled far easier if there's Chinese money behind it, because then studios don't have to pay for these large blockbusters. But also, China does not want Western culture infiltrating their country at any parts, so they get final says on censorship, on what you can say, on what you can teach, or whatever.
Businesses being all too willing to make that trade-off, like, for example, many tech companies.
Disney!
Many content creators, too, like in America, they are happy to make that trade-off to have access to the consumer base of 1.2, 1.3 billion people and growing, many of whom have basic needs that they still would like to have met. So American businesses or business, maybe I shouldn't even say American businesses, because that would imply, like, you know, where they're paying tax and stuff. That could be Ireland. But businesses that we think of as, like, America businesses are all too happy to take this weird trade-off with China at the same time. And as you said, I'm on an Apple computer right now. I have, actually sitting right here. Check it out. Literally right in front of me. This pedal, Chinese knockoff. Really quality pedal, $50 instead of $150. Chinese knockoff, ordered it off of eBay several years ago. But we all have this, and that is frankly a metaphor for America, like America's politics, WWE, Hollywood, many actors. And that part's really complicated. Cena has.
It could be banal stuff. It's like the Chinese, their version of the MPAA. Or whatever it is. You can't make China look bad at all. I think there's no swearing, so I think they get the overdub versions. I think there's no nudity. I think those are the three big no-nos in Chinese culture. And if you want to know how
A bit conservative, you might say. I mean, if you think about it, you can't make the country look bad, you can't be naked, and you can't swear.
Very Tipper Gore circa 1992.
Circa 1980. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, no, it's a bit, yeah, classic.
But if you want to know, to what level of minuscule, they get script supervision thing, because the Meg had to be rewritten at some point so that China didn't look bad, because all the red shirts are basically Chinese. So they didn't want that to, but they basically funded Top Gun 2. If you're looking forward to Tom Cruise playing Maverick in his mid-50s.
Looking forward to be a real stretch. Yeah.
Now, in the original Top Gun, he had this cool-ass bomber jacket with all these patches on it, right? Yeah.
The Taiwan flag was on there.
The Taiwan flag was on there. The Chinese government required him. He can't use the original jacket unless he took off the little small little 2-inch patch of the Taiwanese flag and replace it with something banal. He didn't have to go pro-China per se. He didn't have to wear the jersey of the team, but he couldn't have that little Taiwan flag on there lest it spark a revolution in China for some reason. So yes, they have that kind of, they're not just going to give you the money to do these projects. They're going to say, okay, but we don't want any of your Western stuff.
You have to affirm Chinese values and Chinese beliefs. And little subtle things like that are opportunities to propagandize. It's the erasure of Taiwan as a legitimate state. That Taiwan's claim to legitimacy as a state was never true. And what China is doing is reuniting. Much like they would basically, what they want to do too is kind of roll up the Taiwan thing with Hong Kong and go like, we're just reuniting with Hong Kong. We're just kind of rolling them back into the fold, and we're going to do the same thing over here with Taiwan.
Speaking of mistreatment of Asians, Asuka's never had a clean win over Charlotte.
Oh, and also the way that they use her on these AAPI ads here.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I just think is wildly tasteless. For those of you who haven't seen these necessarily, so on USA every week right now, they're doing, and I think that the spirit of this is good, a large spate of going back to our complex relationship with China. Meanwhile, during all of this, there's a huge uptick in hate crimes here in the United States, which is bad and deplorable and like should be, you know, stopped. And I think proactive measures like this are a good small step that can be taken, right? Asuka, however, and her presentation on WWE television, nothing to be giving out gold star treatment to and holding up little trophies of like, we've been really kicking ass with Asuka. You
Chris
had
made her a champ. She was a champion.
You had a running gimmick with her where on commentary, what she was bringing to the commentary table was frothing Japanese. The whole point was she was crazy and wouldn't even speak in English.
She was crazy.
I did an impression of it, you'd go, Chris, wow, that was questionable.
That's racist.
Right. She was given stage directions to go out there and do that. So if you think that it would be questionable if I did it right now, you'd be right. Then think about what it means to give stage directions on such a thing multiple times to a subordinate who has no choice but to do the thing that you want them to do.
Oh, and the past few weeks, what English words has she been saying? Bitch.
No, but here's the thing, Jeff. What has made it funny is the inflection, right?
Yes.
The exaggerated.
The broken words one at a time.
What is
it?
Business is English too. But yeah. And I
didn't want to use that term, but
that's. I mean, like I've heard, you know, wrestlers use it, tradesmen use it. So I'm just using like as I'm saying.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I can't
and so
use it though, personally,
no.
So.
Asuka, I think is leaning into this. I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
She's leaning into this characterization too. So, like, on one hand, it's over here. I'm like, I'm representing the Japanese culture every time I wear my outfit to the ring. Okay, like the Kabuki Warriors, you could say is a little stock, I guess.
If I grant underwear to the ring, what are we talking about?
I know, I want to grant that, but like it hurts my brain to actually look at it too much. It's like a magic eye.
She's wearing garters and panties and a bra and a push-up bra. What are we
Hawkins, she wears the mask. It's traditional or something.
Okay, that's fine. I'll give her the mask. I'll give her the jacket.
Give you like her, give her a break. But then we have to also, then we also have to actually consider like all these other various presentations, time in and out. And also, more importantly, to your point, not just what I was referring to, her active presentation. So you were showing these commercials and she's coming out in the next segment and leaning heavily into swear words and jazzing them up, shall we say. So like, if that's supposed to be positive representation, I guess I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I just, it's... Oh my goodness. Yeah. The wrestling was good this week on Raw. It's just the storytelling stinks.
How can I care about a 15-minute match with anyone in angles that stink? Like, Drew McIntyre's a dude.
30 minutes again.
The matches are fine. Drew, they're fine. I just don't give a crap about anything he does anymore.
Well, they tell you not to give a crap because we wasted 38 minutes. I looked at the clock and it was 5:38 my time when it ended, of this Drew Kofi thing, just to say, all right, let's do it again next week. What? Xavier Woods and Riddle was fan friggin' tastic.
Okay, that was the exception. I mean, I knew that. I mean, to your point, like, you kind of knew where that was going too. But like, at least that was a really fun match. Woods really outperformed in it. To go back though to Kofi and Drew McIntyre, a big problem in this triple threat angle is I have absolutely no belief that Kofi Kingston nor Drew McIntyre is winning this title back from Bobby Lashley at the end of this road. So I have no interest in even taking a turn down the block. Why would I care, invest any time into this?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't even necessarily know that I would care if Kofi won the title back, but I don't think he's going to. I think there's like a 0.00% chance he gets the title back. And Drew McIntyre, if he gets the title back, I'll put that at 20%. I don't care still.
Yeah, we're waiting for next man up, or to get, or we're
way
or
past Kofi thing, McIntyre,
or Kofi is gonna be sacrificial, and then Drew's back in the title run for SummerSlam and wins the belt in front of the Las Vegas crowd, because I believe they announced today, or they wanted to announce by today, that that's gonna be at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Yeah, I just, it's because if we're already this ahead of the story, then why watch? It's one of those weird things where they do, and also just,
and
the
Lashley
stupidity
and MVP are just boring too, right? Like you know, obviously Lashley, the Godfather, Bobby Lashley.
Pause. But yes, that's what I want to get. The problematic now, because Vince has to. Vince and his African American champion.
Why did that happen with Drew McIntyre or any white champion I could think of in recent vintage?
Yes. Do you get hoes? Do you bring strippers from the local club out at five of them at a time to play out your fantasies from? But he does this a lot with champions he doesn't know what to do with. It's because remember with Roman, he had kind of that 4-week run where every week he'd be a different kind of leading man. Like he'd be a ladies' man and he'd be a smart aleck and then he'd be tough, strong, silent Roman.
Suffering Succotash Roman was my favorite.
Oh, yes. Suffering Succotash Roman. Yeah. This one, though, the race has to have something to do with it for me. I'm sorry. I know people hate when some commentators do that, but my God.
I mean, no, I'm as you've been talking about this, I've been actively trying to rack my brain to think of like a white champion where Vince is even kind of like teased doing the bring out the ladies thing with in the last 15 years. Randy Orton, no. Because it would have to be a heel. He doesn't do it with baby faces because that would make them cool.
And the Trish Shelton thing makes me think it's always that kind of thing too. Was there a? I can't remember all five of the ladies.
There was an African American lady.
Did we have a little Benetton representation going on there? A little Benetton casting.
Yes. Okay. Well, it was. You did have a blonde. You had the blonde with the tattoos and the purple hair, so the wild girl. You had the short, cute brunette, or ravenette. That's generally where I go. You had the African American
Fox Force
lady.
5. We had Fox Force 5.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
There.
Kind of we had an Alicia Fox thing going on there. And then there was another one. It felt dated. It was bloodless. It felt really dated. It didn't seem like MVP and Lashley were really into it, to be completely honest.
Correct.
And
why would he be? He's a happily married man.
right. So, So, like, you know, so it's like, how much do I play this up on camera? Which you can feel, you can vibe on.
You know what it feels? It feels like he's wearing a costume to play this kind of champ versus, you remember the build, he was so awesome because he was just a badass who wanted to be champ. Let him be a badass in a suit. I mean, it's not that hard.
I mean, he can be a badass heel dad, too. Like, that MVP and Bobby Lashley are here to stack up as much money for their families as possible, and they don't care who they have to get over or who they have to step over to get that money for their kids. Like, they don't have to be Lotharios do this. They can, you know, just be trying to ruthlessly get as much money as possible for their own glory, nebulously for their family, but like, yeah, it doesn't. You can still have them be married and have that be part of their heel character.
If you don't think they like Lotharios, remember when the talk of he who shall not be named was brought up as champion, Stephanie would go, "Who would want to f him?" And you know, they love that thing about their champs, that they're sex machines.
She was so wrong about Slapjack, because Slapjack it would have been a great champion, and I definitely think, yeah.
But the problem with the storytelling is, it's like, okay, we have MVP and Bobby Lashley at ringside, and they go in and they ruin the number one contenders match. As if we have two authority figures on the same show. And it's like nobody's ever watched an episode of WWE in their life where this stuff happens all the time and there's no DQ, blah, 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 or what, and a triple threat. You know, it's like, well, why don't you do things to stop people from ruining your triple threat match that you just made? Why are you these soulless husks with hollow chests who do nothing to protect the quote unquote matches that you're making on this Muppet Show 30 Rock behind the scenes show that involves wrestling that you're shooting here? That's why people don't respect the writing on this show from the top guy, is because these logical questions are never answered. It's just, I've had enough. And I feel like we've talked enough about Raw and complaining about this. So unless you got anything else big from this show that you just thought was ridiculous. Oh, Shayna Baszler. Let's do that. Let's go over Shayna and Reggie Bechdel.
Dude, this close to this show. So, like, I know that during this show that there was some good wrestling. But this go-home, this final match, not go-home match, but this main event, and this main event angle, and this closing moment of Raw, the title card moment of Raw, was some of the stupidest, dumbest, like, final segment crap they've had in a very long time. Get into it. Hit me with your Reggie Bechdel take.
Because it ties into NXT as well. And there is this. Why do you take the person with the most tough persona and you do the supernatural crap with them?
Oh, because it's so obvious where this is going. Who did
Alexa
the biggest?
Alexa Bliss is gonna pin Shayna clean as a sheet after doing some voodoo crap.
And she's gonna interrupt the match between Shayna Baszler and Reggie Bechdel next week.
Yes, probably.
Yep.
Probably make.
That's how they get out of that match, and that's how they prevent that match. Because God help us, did Shayna Baszler go down next week and just kick Reggie Bechdel's head off and then put him in the Terafuda clutch, which he does not roll over and pin Shayna Baszler 1-2-3 because she doesn't know how to get out of it because she's an idiot now. Shayna Baszler needs to decapitate Reggie Bechdel next week and make him scream for his life and then break his arm. But that won't happen.
No, he's getting Alexa harness on him, and he's getting dragged up to the heavens or something like
and
that.
And the doll
so
is
going to
show up and laugh and go, at Shayna Baszler. And Shayna Baszler's going to be like, oh, I don't even know what that means. How can that be? And that's
meanwhile,
what we're getting
her,
next week.
Meanwhile, her partner in Trifecta, one of the greatest stables ever there, Mercedes Martinez, is having to deal with Chinese characters being written on her hand and smoke coming up.
What is this?
Okay, what is going on?
And then, oh, by the way, Nia Jax is still involved in this angle, too. and by the way, all this is happening during a humdinger, a 11 minutes and 42 seconds match between Natalya and Tamina. So you have, like, these absolutely bloodless, dead in the water, you could not care less about this tag team champion combo if you tried, Tamina and Natalya, who are having no character development. They are on no character arc. You are not invested in their journey. They are
they had a random face turn at some point, which we'd have no idea about.
Yep.
I am looking forward to the Nia Jax face turn when Reggie... when Poochie is sent back to his home planet.
That hasn't happened. He keeps showing back up. We thought Reggie was done going back to Poochie planet. And instead, he keeps showing back. Vince likes Reggie. It's very clear.
I like Reggie. It's just in this story, he stinks.
No. Vince likes Reggie. It's not... I like the performer who plays Reginald and think that this guy is heinously miscast, and it's actually kind
of
cool.
Oh, he likes
cool.
the character of Reggie
yes.
with Nia.
Yes.
Nia. Yeah, no.
Yes.
Yeah, because he likes the small guy, big girl dynamic.
He has these very weird, very cliched 20th century sexual
fetish
things.
Could you imagine
things?
Them in the bed? Oh, she'd crush him. Oh, that kind of crap. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in the voice of Vince.
No. It's absolutely.
No, not you, people listening. but
no,
yeah,
it's a very.
I could see them. I could see
humor.
Them trying to get yep. sympathy for Nia through Reggie Bechdel, and I just.
Oh,
I don't see that happening.
I'll tell you. You know where it's going to be really interesting is when they start running back in front of crowds, because I could see audiences turning the hell on these shows.
You know what we need to add to this? We need to add Eva Marie in that storyline. Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, it's funny that this is the one place where they have elected to go in a subtle storytelling route. Because you can start to see where this is going, but she is so subtle about this. I bet you a good chunk of the audience very much thinks she's coming in as a babyface.
She fooled Dave Meltzer. I mean, it was, you know, yeah, I can see that too. But yeah. Obviously there's a disingenuous
it's subtle in a way that WWE does not. It's really weird. It's very strange. There's like this nuance. I bet you the nuance might crumble away, but there is a nuance right now that is very uncommon for them.
But you also know when they do nuance, it's fake. Like when Alexa Bliss after the was it the first
nuance is usually countervailed with
where she's doing that.
Nuance is countervailed with anti-subtlety.
Yes, but it also you can see the 180 coming a mile away where it's I just want to thank you all for helping me and know that you're never gonna achieve your dreams. You know, that kind of thing where it just on the flip of a switch turns heel. All right, NXT, we kind of went through.
So a little bit more. I am absolutely flummoxed by the Zeta Ramirez usage and utilization, especially in this match this week against Mercedes Martinez, which was really a setup for Mercedes Martinez to get the hand marking. So, like, they're trying to build Zeta Ramirez, and they're trying to tell this story in commentary, like, wow, Zeta Ramirez had a really competitive match. Except she really didn't. She was basically outclassed by Mercedes Martinez, as she should have been. Don't get me wrong here. But, like, why have Zeta Ramirez in that? If you want to build Zeta Ramirez, this week Zeta Ramirez has an enhancement match against a mean girl heel who Zeta Ramirez overcomes, and we start getting a sense of what Zeta Ramirez's finishing move is. So that if she has a match against Mercedes Martinez, I know what to look for in terms of Zeta Ramirez's finishing move, which I guess is a crossbody or something off the top, I think. It's whatever she beat Toni Storm with, I guess. But is that her move? We don't know yet. So you would want to have an actual establishment enhancement match here. But instead, she loses to Mercedes Martinez. So it's like, shut up, Zeta. Go and hang out in the back with Zoe Stark and be one of her buddies.
Mercedes gave up way too much offense to her, too, for way it to be a complete squash. So it's, it's like, look, you got 30 women at a training center. Teach, you know, give one a cheap gimmick. Have her take the cross body, 1, 2, 3, get out of there. She doesn't have to do that much. Just
the heel. Literally just have Zeta Ramirez go up against the mean masked luchadora. She just puts a mask on.
Yes.
The black, evil, jerky looking mask. And Zeta Ramirez goes out there and has a 2.5 minute match wherein she gets 100% of the offense because it doesn't matter because she's going against Scrubzo Maguba, whatever her name is, Scrubzo Maguba.
Oh, you got to pull out things from the old 605, like the Masked Terror or something like some dumb name where it's just nobody you're going to care about in it later. Just
the evil queen. Yeah, the Zeta Ramirez versus female. The evil queen. Yeah, the masked queen. Yeah.
The masked female or the masked queen.
Yeah.
Kick, stomp, crossbody, 1, 2, 3, you're out of there. Jeez, yeah. I mean, it's...
Maybe the masked queen briefly gets like one moment of offense so that Zeta Ramirez can do her fire up, come back, and get in with a big win. That's exactly all that needed to happen for Zeta Ramirez, especially since you're not trying to build her for a title shot anytime soon, or at least you shouldn't because she's totally not ready. She needs to be having enhanced matches wherein she's getting shine.
NXT UK was the... After having a great match the week before, this was the come down a little bit. This was the story time type thing. Wrestling was fine.
Uselessly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Shaw Samuel and Nathan Frazier going 20 minutes or whatever. 12
oh, my
minutes,
God. Way too that
long.
Match felt like it was never going to. It was not a good exploration of the time. It was just a match that felt like it was going. And going.
The one great thing on this show, I thought, was the Mako Satomura Kaylee Ray video package. I thought that was really fantastic. And it really, you know, after the clunky storytelling of where Kaylee Ray, we thought she was going face for a while. Really cool. And then the other thing I really, really liked, I liked that Jack Starr's Pretty Deadly interaction.
Oh, yeah.
That felt real.
Yeah, I mean, I like Pretty Deadly as these antagonizing dudes. I think they found a really nice voice with them. Stars, I miss my friend.
I mean,
I miss my friend. And even if she was there, she couldn't help me. And he's starting to realize, like, maybe I don't have friends.
He's a friendless loser. And he's
That's the thing is him. Okay. NXT UK is the only show where I have any faith in this story actually being paid in this company, in this story being like paid off in a like sort of satisfying way. But like, I like Jack Starr's like dark moment of the soul where he's like, what if I don't have any friends? Like, what if I can't actually find somebody to go up against Pretty Deadly? And like, right now we don't know who that ready, obvious tag team partner for Jack Starr's is. So it's probably going to be a surprise partner, which will be fun. I like Pretty Deadly. I like Jack Starr's, and I'm sure whoever they put with Jack Starr's will be a good partner, and it will yield a good match. So I'm at least looking forward to that angle.
Actually, I liked the Ilya Dragunov.
Oh yes, I
promo
thought
too.
Okay, so he was kind of stumbling over some of the dialogue, but yeah. I think the general theme of the promo was good. Actually like where the character is now. We've seen some growth and some evolution. Is he still unstable? Yes. Does he have better control of it at the moment? Yes. And I do, because they're not going to be going back to the Walter Imperium thing. So they're like moving away from that, and they're sort of pivoting the character a little bit, and not necessarily.
He has to kill Noam Dar.
Yeah.
I mean, Noam Dar shouldn't get a single move in. I mean, he should attack before the bell. Pound the hell out of him, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I think maybe Dar should get to a point where he slaps Ilya Dragunov in the face, and that turns that at that point it turns into like a snap annihilation. Yeah, no, yeah. I completely agree. The other, I guess, big beat in the show here are the Tamon versus Ashton Smith was an absolute non-entity. Alpha Carter came in and made the save.
But he wasn't there due to travel issues, right? Oliver, and so now we have to do the split between Oliver Carter and Whoop Guy.
It's so weird. It's like Whoop Guy. I mean, he made the save.
There was
for
so
Whoop
much
Guy.
Wrong with this match too, because
this match stunk.
The style that they had, Tamon wrestle. He has to be. And I hate to, he who shall not be named. He has to be that kind of guy where he's just breaking down a bigger wrestler. And instead he's like going hold for hold. And he's getting clotheslined and looking, because Ashton Smith is much bigger than him. And just every time he clotheslined him, it's like Ashton Smith should be the guy going over. But instead you have basic wrestling, chain wrestling moves from Tamon versus Ashton Carter here.
It's strange because Teoman's been built above Ashton Smith. He's already had enhancement matches with, I forget, like, he had an enhancement match against Starr's, right? Yeah, he did. Yes. And then like at the end of the match, he's like, I have mad respect for him. And Starr's, I think, and this is fair, you can say, as NXT UK connoisseurs, well versed in the history, I think we can say fairly clearly here that Starr's is held in a higher standard than Ashton Smith is. Ashton Smith has never had a match against Walter, for example, and although Starr's was murdered by Walter, the fact that Starr's was even considered for that, like, is just sort of an exhibit of like that he is considered in a higher status than Smith. Smith is an absolute 100% prelim guy.
Chris, something scary just came over me. Ashton Smith is going to be Jack Starr's partner, isn't he? Because of the respect thing. And that's going to drive the wedge between him and Oliver Carter. And this is going to be the new Kenny Williams versus. I have already forgotten his name.
Okay, actually, you know what? I bet you it's like Andy Wilde. I bet you Andy Wilde, who had the match against Kenny Williams, is Jack Starr's partner.
You know who it could be? It could be, who's Kenny Williams' old partner? I can't remember his name right
now. Oh, well, no, that guy's gone. He got banned from NXT UK.
But we made an exception, because in the bylaws of WWE, he said when you get a partner, you can get anybody.
His name was Dancy Magoo.
His name
Amir was Jordan. Amir Jordan.
Amir Jordan.
Yeah. Nancy Magoo. No, he stunk. Kenny Williams, the only thing I can say about Kenny Williams is that
I
like
that was a squash. That was a hell of a squash.
That was a hell of a squash, and I actually like the twist of shaving the beard to turn heel.
Yeah.
Going the opposite way. As a wrestling connoisseur, I was like, oh, that's fun. I like that's the only example of zigging instead of zagging that I have that I can think of this week. I like that. And that was fresh. And he actually looks really good clean shaven. Yeah. I think the look update is a big improvement.
That would be great to be disingenuous babyface. And you shaved off your facial hair. And now you're just going to play the, hey, high five and all that other stuff.
I want to shake your hand, buddy. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's WWE. Let's preview Double or Nothing, which takes place Saturday, I believe, as opposed to Sunday. Let's see, hold on. What day is it? May 30th. Tomorrow's 28th. No, it is on Sunday. Go back to the Saturday pay-per-views, for God's sakes. Or is this, yeah, go back to the Saturday pay-per-views as opposed to the Sunday pay-per-views.
I guess they think Sunday, because it's on Memorial Day weekend, technically is a Saturday, but it's not. That's not how people think about this, people.
Starting with on the pre-show, a match that should be on the card instead of this battle royal. For the NWA Women's Championship, the champion Serena Deeb taking on Riho in a match that should be pretty good as a sprint, I think. I'll go first on this one. There's no way in hell Riho is taking this title from Serena Deeb. I actually think this might actually be a screw job in some ways so that Riho doesn't have to be pinned.
I will go further. I'll go further. I think we've begun to see the start of a Serena Deeb heel turn. And okay. I think this Riho match is going to serve as a platform to further that heel turn storyline. I do not think that Riho has a snowball's chance in hell of actually winning the title, but I do think that we will see Deeb take advantage of Riho, and Riho is a perfect foil to be small and sort of like overwhelmed, and Deeb does need someone smaller than her to really sort of like accentuate the heelness. So that's where I think we're going, but Deeb retains, and Deeb probably retains by using a little bit of darker tactics.
Let's go with this Casino Battle Royale next. Christian Cage, Matt Sydal, Powerhouse Hobbs, Penta El Zero Miedo. I can't. It's a Penta El Zero. Jungle Boy, Matt Hardy, Mark Quinn, Isaiah Cassidy, Blade, Evil Uno, Colt Cabana, Preston Vance, Griff Garrison, Brian Pillman Jr., Max Caster, Anthony Bowens, QT Marshall, Nick Comoroto, Dustin Rhodes, Lee Johnson, and a player to be named, the usual number
cash considerations, baby.
Number one, go give me. Let's see. What are we
playing for here? Like, what do we win if we win the Casino Battle Royal?
I believe for a future AEW World Championship match. So, give me two picks for your TBA. And who do you think is going to win?
A lot of people have been released from WWE recently, haven't they?
Yeah, but I don't think they are eligible due to the 90-day non-compete.
Andrade is, though, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go Andrade.
Okay. Do you have a second, perhaps, off the wall pick? If not, that's okay. I do. That's why I asked.
William the Refrigerator Perry.
I'll take that as an answer. Now, who wins this battle royal?
I think Christian Cage.
Okay. We agree. I think Christian Cage wins this. I think your possible legend who comes in, because I don't think it's going to be a new guy. I don't think it's going to be a talent of note that
Rob
they don't
want
to beat. I think Too Cold Scorpio, since he's been hitting the indies and having a hot run on the indies of late. I think for that crowd there, they will pop mad for him, and he can do some moves with Sydal and, you know, other guys, and it'll be a thrill for them. Or
is Scorpio still doing the 450?
Yes.
If he does the 450 better than Matt Sydal did the Shooting Star Press, he's going to be a big success.
No, he does the twisting leg. I don't think he does the 450 anymore, but
Okay, so he don't that twisting leg though. I wouldn't want to take that. That Scorpio is a little all over the place back in the day with that twisting leg.
Or I think they go full comedy here with the wild card and go full anticlimactic in some ways, as opposed to the previous ones where it's like who's going to be the big surprise here. -1 in front of a full house to give him the cheer because he lost his father. He spends a little bit of time in the Battle Royale, and then Colt Cabana and Preston Vance, 10, and Evil Uno, gently throw him over the top or place him over the top for him to hop down before he gets really hurt by somebody.
Maybe. They might go with -1. They might go with -1.
I could see that. I could just see that for some reason. I don't know why. But yes, Christian Cage is getting the title match out of this because he's had a less than stellar, would you say, run in AEW.
The only reason he's there is to have a main event pushed.
Yes.
Yeah. He's, unless you think he's going to have a match against Miro. And
there are 10 matches on this card. We are going all friggin' night, guys.
Wow.
All right, what do I want to do next here? Let's go with the non-title tag team match on this. Sting and Darby Allin versus Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page.
I think Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page win.
I do too, and I think Darby and Sting have a little shoving afterwards.
Yeah. I've been sort of saying Darby heel turn thing might happen. So yeah, I think there'll be a little tension.
In the other non-title match on here, or actually there's two more non-title matches, Hangman Adam Page taking on Brian Cage of Team Taz. Has to be Adam Page.
It's Page. It's Page and someone from Team Taz, probably Ricky Starks, cost Cage the match.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking, too.
Yeah, I think Starks cost Cage the match. Yes, they can't pay off right now the physicality between Starks and Cage, but I think the Starks and Cage... Actually, the fact that Starks can't get physical actually helps with him screwing with Cage more. It he can be more of an antagonist without ever actually laying a hand on him. And so I think, Ricky Starks cost Cage the match and Page wins.
Cody Rhodes with Arn Anderson taking on Anthony Agogo with QT Marshall, Nick Comoroto, and Aaron Solo in tow. Anything short of Cody Rhodes not coming out to James Brown's Living in America and 15 seconds with one punch being put on the ground is going to be disappointing for me. Who do you got?
I mean... they've really created themselves a monster here with this Anthony Agogo character, in the sense that I don't really understand how you actually beat this guy when you want to beat this guy in a coherent way. Like, is he just going to miss the punch every time he swings it at the opponent in that particular match? It's not going to be this match against Cody. He's going to knock out Cody. Cody's going down.
And this match probably isn't going to go very long.
I'm just trying to figure out, with the way you built up this guy, so, you know, okay, he beats Cody. That's great. Eventually, you want Agogo to lose, right? Or maybe you never want him to ever lose. And in which case, he can just be One Punch Man. That's great. But One Punch Man is an anime character, and it's kind of a parody of anime. It's not really a wrestler. So at some point, Agogo's got to lose. How is he going to lose? Is every time... And he's throwing body shots, too. This is not Agogo throws a big, big hook, and, you have a guy who can duck that hook. Someone with really great reflexes, he just knows how to pull away and kind of sideswipe the hook, and that would look really good visually, too. Agogo's signature move is this midsection body shot thing. How is someone going to... look? We're going to have a guy just, shimmy their core the entire match, and that's how we're going to get this baby face over because he's got incredible core control and can dodge these body shots? I think that... it's not going to be a problem in this match. Again, Agogo's going to win this match. But it's going to be a problem long-term with Agogo. They've overbooked this guy. I know people like the body shot, one-punch KO thing. They like that it's an incorporation of boxing stuff into the wrestling world. But I never see a wrestling... I never see an attempt to grapple with the obvious tension that having this overpowered of a single attack is in the context of storytelling.
The Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, taking on Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston in a tag team match for the AEW World Tag Team Championship, Chris.
I think the Bucks lose.
You think the titles change?
Yeah, I think we have because we need something feel good on this show. And I could see the Bucks losing here.
I think the feel good comes later.
Okay.
To be honest with you. I have the Bucks retaining, and I'm pretty sure.
I don't feel strongly about Moxley and Kingston winning. I feel like we need a feel good, and this feels like the Zig instead of Zag match.
I feel like, I know we're kind of booking interference or something in a lot of matches, but it feels to me they may hold off interference on everything else except for anything involving the Elite. And I think the Good Brothers get involved with this and end up screwing Moxley and Kingston somehow. And it leads to later in the night, and I'll explain at that time.
Oh, I'll go the other way. The Good Brothers screw things up for the Young Bucks, kind of increasing the tension, but they're still all heels inside the stable. So he's now planted the seed of what's going to ultimately blow up the bullshit club here.
I think that'll come. Stadium Stampede, the Pinnacle, MJF, Wardlow, Sean Spears, Cash Wheeler, and Dax Harwood with the awesome Tully Blanchard taking on the Inner Circle of Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, Sammy Guevara, Santana, and Ortiz. If the Inner Circle lose, they must disband as a team forever. Chris, is this the last time that we will ever see the Inner Circle as a unit?
God, Jeff, what if we never see the Inner Circle again? Can you imagine a world without the Inner Circle? All the good times. The beloved faction, the Inner Circle. All the good
times. I'm stepping on this. Keep going.
Yeah, no. I mean, God.
Remember that time he sprayed guys with champagne?
What a hoot that was. There's the other time where Jericho was hanging out in the bathroom for a long time, but then he was cool. And he beat up the other guys. There's just been so many fun times with the Inner Circle over the years. So it'd be a real shame if they went away, but I don't think we're going to have to worry about that. I think, once they created this like ridiculous stipulation, it all but ensured that the baby faces were going to win here and that this feud between MJF and, Chris Jericho will continue despite the fact that with each passing week, I have lost interest in it. I went from being the most interested I ever was prior to the Blood and Guts match to being, you know, pretty interested during the Blood and Guts match, too. Not very interested after the Blood and Guts match, too. Extremely not interested as we go into this match. So, well done, guys.
The interesting choice is to beat the Inner Circle.
But then that would mean a world without the Inner Circle, Jeff. That would basically kill AEW as a company. They're trying to expand and do another show.
They can journey through the desert, trying to find a purpose, trying to figure out a way to get back.
It's a real dark night of the soul, though, buddy.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. If you beat the Pinnacle in this, I can't view them as an elite faction. I'm sorry.
No, them Pinnacle beating Inner Circle would actually establish them as elite because the faction killed another faction. It'd be a big fish eating a little fish. Like here comes Pinnacle. They ended Inner Circle. And yeah, it's not like they ended it. It's not as though Sammy Guevara, Chris Jericho, and all of them have to leave town or whatever, but they can now be like officially legally banned from being the Inner Circle or whatever. And like that, you know, what will that be? I think that that's actually the more interesting choice. But I don't think they do that.
I think they split the baby here. I think the Inner Circle technically win. And then the Pinnacle takes out Jericho for good so that Jericho can go tour with his band and whatever he's going to do during the summer. And it kind of leaves the Inner Circle rudderless. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, to that point, that might actually be how they break up the Inner Circle. Why the Inner Circle loses here is that Jericho's going to tour. You don't need to keep the Inner Circle storyline going without a Jericho anyways, so why not just break them up?
I could also just see them beating the Inner Circle and then the Inner Circle coming. We've renamed ourselves.
Yeah, right. No, well, I mean, here's the other thing. What are the laws governing factions? Like, if Jericho leaves a faction, you still have the other four guys, Santana, Ortiz, Guevara, and Hager. Like, are they not allowed to ever faction together ever again?
Did you just make faction a verb?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. As a matter of faction. Thank you very much. And, you know, so what if Jericho, Guevara, Santana, and Ortiz all get to back together, but they don't have Hagar? Are they allowed to do that?
Well, maybe they could get David Lee Roth then, as opposed to Hagar.
Right, right. If you bring in Roth, but what if Jericho wants to call it the Inner Circle, or like the new Inner Circle?
The Outer Circle.
The Inner Limits, the Outer Limits.
The Venn Diagram. Yeah, you know.
The new original Inner Circle.
Miro or Dante Martin if he wins tomorrow, which he won't. So Miro taking on Lance Archer with Jake Roberts. For the TNT title, big men slapping meat. I'm here for this, baby. And I don't think there's going to be a definitive winner. I could see double count out.
Yeah, I see this coming to a non-finish of some sort. Although the power move would actually be to have Miro beat Lance Archer in a fairly decisive manner. I know that would be tough for Lance Archer, but like Miro's hot right now, baby. And having Miro get a strong win over Lance Archer, like that would be cool. That'd be a big baller move. But I think you tend to be right. They are going to be going with these kind of split the difference, like no kind of clear winner thing.
Hikaru Shida, or if you're Dasha, Hikaru Shida, taking on Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, with Reba, not Rebel, or Rebel, not Reba, for the singles match. For the AEW Women's World Championship. Now, Shida has had this title throughout the non-crowd era. She has said her dream is to win this title in front of a large crowd. I think we belt Dr. Britt and we give it to Hikaru later, or Hikaru, however you want to put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. But I think it's time to put the belt on Britt Baker.
Yeah, I think so. I think the build to this match has been centered around Britt Baker. I think that when we saw Shida go and try to put on the glove and do all that stuff, it actually kind of gave away, you know, who's winning this match. I think it's going to be Britt Baker. So that's fine. Shida has lost a bit of steam. She's been having good matches, but the characterization hasn't been there. And you can kind of tell in the presentation over the last month or so, people they're setting up the off ramp. They're getting you ready to see her lose the title. And they've been setting the table for that for the last several weeks here, even as she's been getting wins.
Finally, for the AEW World Championship, Kenny Omega with Don Callis and probably a cast of thousands versus Orange Cassidy and Pac. Chris, tell us who wins the match and tell us how we close the show.
Now, when you say you think the feel-good moment's coming later in the show and this is the only match left, it leads me to believe that Jeff Hawkins actually thinks that Orange friggin' Cassidy is leaving this show.
I would never go that far.
The juice. The juice is going to... No, I think they're going to screw the juice. I think that the juice is going to get squeezed from multiple sides here. No, don't pour one out.
How many other puns can you think of?
You know, aren't you glad that I had those puns at the ready, Hawkins? But I think I've squeezed as much juice from that lemon as I possibly could. Don't be sour at me, pal. All right. So I think that Omega wins. I think that Omega wins, and that you think this is going to have a cast of thousands. I think you're wrong. I think that this is going to be fairly clean. It's going to, get people to believe for the first time that Orange Cassidy could really become champion one day. And the point of this match is going to be setting the table as Orange Cassidy main event guy. But this is not going to be Orange Cassidy's main event wherein he wins the championship, because if you were going to do that with a babyface, you'd want to have him win in front of an audience.
I think this is going to set up Orange Cassidy as quote unquote guy who could possibly win the title someday. And I don't think he's ever going to win the title someday. But here's what I also think. I also think, God help me for saying this, remember, Chris, there are no DQs in a triple threat match. And I think they're going to go that route. I think they're going to go in the WWE playbook. I think the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers are coming out at that moment when Orange Cassidy could possibly win, when he has him on the ropes. And they're going to beat down Pac, and they're going to beat down Orange Cassidy. Then all hell's going to break loose with Best Friends and Death Triangle coming out to try and save the things. Then Moxley and Eddie Kingston are going to come out as well to join the fray because of getting screwed early in the night. Then Christian Cage is going to come out after winning the Battle Royale because, you know, they're setting him up for the next title shot. I think the guy who ends up cleaning them all out, I think Daniel Bryan makes an appearance. Bryan Danielson makes an appearance at the end of this show. And that is our feel-good moment as we cut to black.
This isn't a triple threat, though, right? Like, this is only...
It's a three-way match. I don't think this is elimination style.
Oh, you're right. You're right. This is Pac, and I'm... My bad. This is Pac and Orange Cassidy's in this. No, Omega has to win. I thought it was Omega versus Orange Cassidy. I just had like a total brain fart. I forgot Pac was in this, but I remember Pac's promo was like, no one will bet against Pac. He had a good good promo on last week's show. Maybe you do have Daniel Bryan come down at the end. I don't know.
That would overshadow Christian Cage winning the Battle Royal for the world title thing. That's the problem with that, my thinking there.
Yeah. And the problem with this main event is it's very clear they're not hitting the abort button on the Kenny Omega belt collector, the bullshit club, as I call them. Like, we're all in on that narrative. I don't know how this, I don't know how this show ends, but I feel pretty clear in saying that Omega's going to be the winner.
Yeah, I do too. That's the one thing that Kenny Omega is not losing until he picks up. Actually, you know what? Somebody from New Japan may show up too. And you know, I could see Kenny going over and taking that IWGP vacant title and being part of this belt collector thing in whatever tournament there is. Maybe a Kota Ibushi shows up here. We know that there's some guys working with TNA right now from New Japan. That could always happen too. I mean, but at the end of the night, we're going with Belt Collector Kenny, and Belt Collector Kenny is still going to be the champion at the end of the night. So we'll end it there. Follow me at CrapGame13. You follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are available on audio and all your podcasting platforms. Please give us a 5-star rating. We have not begged for ratings for at least 5 years. So if you want to give us a 5-star rating
for 5 years of uninterrupted poor promotion,
uninterrupted, not sucking up for a rating, please do, because that'll help us get more listeners in the logic of podcast searching. You can also watch us and watch all my terrible faces that I make accidentally, usually. On Voices of Wrestling on their YouTube channel there.
At least you don't have a predatory GIF guy and Cody out there hate watching this show and turning it into those GIF images that upset me.
Chris, you do a show with Cody, don't you? The aforementioned Cody is part of DWA.
No. First of all, get this. You do a show of Cody, the phrase out of your mouth. Sometimes I have a show. It's called Don't Worry About the Government. You can find it on don'tworry.tv, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, number of different places. I have panelists on sometimes, and I do share the Zoom link, and someone occasionally gives it to Cody, who then shows up on the show unannounced, uninvited, unwanted.
So the Chris and Cody show every week on Patreon.
No. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to sign off with you the same way I sign off with Cody. Shut it, shove it, get lost.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.